Welcome to the Productivity Podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by Trevor Hudson, author of the book Neverland and trainer and consultant for Tough Leadership Development. Hi, Trevor. How are you doing?
Hi, Simon. I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good. Now, I know you're struggling with a cold, as we just said off air, so we'll take your bunged up nose and the odd cough as part of just the general conversation. That's fine.
Very kind of you. Thank you.
So, Trevor, just tell us a bit about yourself first, and then we'll touch on the book and the bits you're doing today.
Yeah, sure. So I have been working in the leadership space primarily for what is getting on now for 20 years, which is horrible to say because obviously that makes me feel a lot older than I actually am. And I've been working with leaders and managers, and pretty much in that time, a kind of guiding light for me over that entire period has been, how do we sort of rethink how we do leadership and management? And I've had a number of roles in learning and heading up training teams and working within HR and helping to rethink how employees work. And most of my work, if I'm honest, has been in tech, but sort of every version of tech. You know how these days there's sort of fintech and insurtech and everything comes with a tech after it. So I've worked primarily in those kind of fields, really.
Excellent. And written a book, which is no mean feat.
Yeah, kind of like a side gig. So I was working with a community called the Hello Monday Club, and it was all about how we change the employee experience and how we rethink how work is done to make work fundamentally more enjoyable. And I'd written about half a dozen blog posts, and they were always sort of too long, really, for what a blog post should be. And I was always cutting content out, and the reception that they got was really warm. So then I thought, well, actually, the next step is probably to compile the longer forms of these into full chapters and add a little bit more research and sort of top and tail it, and a book was born.
Perfect. Yeah, we've launched our book last year as well. So I would say I feel your pain, but I didn't do much of the writing, Sue did. So I kind of stole the title on the front, unfortunately.
And yeah, it's amazing how much the sort of as they say, like the last 5 yards, the pain that's involved in the last pieces of the book, where you have to actually press send to a publisher and kind of decide that you're happy with it. I don't think I'll ever decide I'm happy with it, but that was the most painful bit.
Good, and we'll put a link on the next show notes so people can find the book if they're interested. And Tough Leadership, talk to us a bit about what you do there.
Yeah, so I am a trainer and a consultant. It's a really interesting organisation because it is self-managed. So we're all some version of independent, but there's no line management, and there's decision making is something that's agreed upon, and it's been in existence for about 20 years now, and it originated in Sweden, and now we're global, but particularly in Europe and the UK, and we specialize in creating more empowered cultures, primarily through leadership development, but by various other ways in which we can support organizations. And we work with a lot of organizations in the third sector and a lot of organizations that are looking to become more self-managed. So we're sort of working with companies that are really interested in becoming as progressive as they can be, really.
Excellent. So that kind of leads us into the real crux of our conversation today around employee experience, what it could look like in the future. And you talked about self-managed then. So as a bigger statement, I think the world we see at the moment is, if we think of retail, let's take it as an example, in the next 5 to 10 years, because of the cost of paying people national living wage, lots of organizations are going to have a flatter structure, and there's probably going to be less leaders and even less colleagues around, and that probably plays true across all types of organizations. So what or where's your head kind of starting to turn to look what's coming over the horizon for this kind of future of employee experience?
Yeah, so we're in a really fortunate position, I think, that what most organizations are trying out now has been done somewhere else. So it's not that they're doing something that's necessarily brand new, but they're trying to be as progressive as they can. And there are lots of other organizations that have tried things out. So if we think about what most organizations do, which is that they look to change the structure. So your example of, well, we know that there's a lot of overhead in management, so we want to reduce management layers and we want to maybe have less leaders involved. Organizations have tried that to varying degrees of success. And what we see is that that can be really effective, and it often creates change in itself because it pushes responsibility down within the organization and pushes decision-making and responsibility to be more distributed. But the challenge is that often the behaviors aren't changed in line with that. So you have a philosophy perhaps of control, or you have a philosophy of people wanting to stay, leaders in particular, managers wanting to constantly stay in the loop and be updated and be fully informed and take a position of power. And if you do that and you remove layers, then you tend to create stress everywhere in your organization. Mm-hmm. Because you end up with individuals who get sort of, they may still be micromanaged, but they're micromanaged less frequently. So they're sort of guessing what it is that they should be done, and maybe they're not getting genuine direction. And then you end up with leaders who are constantly trying to stay abreast of everything that's going underneath them, but now their span of accountability is far too wide. So a lot of the work that we do, whether we work directly or whether we're just helping people to notice this stuff as they make these kind of changes, is to ensure that the leaders that you've got are able to have a completely different kind of conversation and relate to leadership in a completely different way. And that is one that creates empowerment in the organization and creates a culture based on trust. And so people then step up and take responsibility in a way that's completely different. It becomes a much more adult culture rather than parent-child culture, which is what historically those hierarchies have been based on. And so essentially the kind of the golden ticket is don't just change structure, change culture at the same time.
And that's easier said than done, I assume, because changing structure, you can have all the science behind it, you can draw it on a board with no science behind it, which is always a risk. But changing a culture is a completely different animal to tackle.
Yeah, but completely. And that's the reason why people often choose structure, because it feels more tangible and it's something that you can deliver. So, you know, if you're being charged with, quote unquote, sorting out the organization so that it's fit for purpose, you can describe your structural change and you can probably do it with very clearly defined deadlines and milestones and outcomes, and you can prove that you've delivered on the thing that you said you're going to deliver on. Only a crazy person, I think, would sign up and say, we're not doing anything with those tangible things. I just want to change culture. But nonetheless, those crazy people are the ones that are really creating organizations that they thrive and they are empowered and they're able to be a lot leaner and more efficient, sometimes even without the structure changes, because once that culture is in place, it sort of superimposes itself over whatever structure is there. And so whilst it is the harder task, I think you're right, it's less tangible, it requires more effort, it requires more sustained effort, it requires quite a lot of buy-in from significant people in the organization. It's often the thing that eventually pays the most dividends.
And is that whole ethos then around putting the employees first? Where's the seismic shift?
Yeah, so I think one thing that a lot of people look for is they look for a sort of a golden bullet or a way to do this in a really neat way. And the reality is that it's messy and frustrating. So the reason that we call ourselves tough leadership is because the training, which is often the backbone of these kind of changes, training your managers and leaders, because they sort of, at least to some degree, hold the power in most organizations' current state, the training that we put them through is incredibly tough. So it's not the case that we sort of go, oh, we've got another magic formula, really. it's more the case that we say, well, there sort of isn't a magic formula. It's just hard work. And the sort of guidance that we give is that this is more about a shift in paradigm than it is about acquiring new skills. And one metaphor that's a little bit mechanistic, but sometimes helps people to understand this, is the idea of both apps and operating systems. So you can add lots of new apps onto your phone and you can try different ways of doing things. But what we are saying is that unless you upgrade the operating system, which is another way of saying you upgrade your way of being, how you show up, how you relate to your employees, how you think about work, how you the mindset that you have when you show up. If you can't upgrade those things, then not very much changes. Conversely, if you can upgrade those things, then all the apps that you have been using tend to work better. And you get access to a whole load of new apps. A lot of them are related to how you really push responsibility down the organization and encourage people to take a lot more accountability than they might otherwise.
So that kind of then drives more productivity as the outcome rather than the kind of input?
Yeah, well, you get what starts to happen is you, because it's a lot of trust-based, and because you're empowering your teams a lot more, then what leaders tend to do, it very much depends on the context, is to start setting the challenge as an outcome. So, you know, we're looking to achieve this kind of customer interaction. We're looking to achieve this kind of sentiment for our organization. We're looking to drive this goal. We're looking to hit these numbers. And then trusting the teams that they're going to be able to get there. So it tends to become a lot more outcome focused. Of course, there are some times where that's not possible and you do need to be more prescriptive and there does need to be a bit more of a kind of rule of law. But for the most part, that is the general shift we see. And you're getting several benefits by doing that if productivity is your goal. Mm-hmm. One is that people require less intervention in order to be able to drive towards the things that you've decided are important, your KPIs or whatever outcomes you're looking for. Also, people tend to do it in a more natural way. So when we think about employee engagement, for example, which has been a hot topic for many, many years and yet doesn't seem to shift, we would argue that this is one of the reasons it doesn't shift. Is because it's all engagement seems to be something that's done to people rather than something that's unleashed. So you can set an outcome and people will naturally be more productive towards it. They want to achieve. People generally want to do good work. They'll be more engaged in how they get there. And you get a lot of these ancillary benefits. So you get generally greater employee retention because people are sort of driving their own mastery and driving their own autonomy. And you also get more interactions and more communication, and people are able to show up in a way that brings all of their talents, not just the ones that you've predetermined and the ones that are necessary to get to the outcome. So, you know, to hit on a bit of a theme of the book, for example, you get people who are showing up in a more sort of whole human way, which is slightly different from people bringing all of themselves to work, which is a great thing to say, but in reality, you don't need everything that everyone brings. But if when they do show up, they're able to show up in a really genuine and human way. They're not showing up sort of pretending to be a role, and that goes for employees and managers. You typically have a happier and more successful workplace.
So I suppose might be a naive question, but I'll ask it anyway because that's the point of these things. If we're pushing, if colleagues are more empowered, we're working in more of a self-managed way, how does that then play with what most businesses want, which is consistency? So how do you still keep a framework that people operate in and some business principles if locally people are taking more empowerment over decisions?
Yeah, it's a really good example. And it's a question that sort of comes from that previous paradigm, to be honest. Now, there are obviously some times where consistency is going to be important. But it's true also that for a long time, almost the definition of organizations has been the creation of something that is very consistent. And this has gone almost to an absurd level where, as I mentioned before, you deal with employee engagement And then the solution to employee engagement and the solution to a lot of people issues in organizations is to come up with the one consistent thing that will solve it for everyone. And of course, that doesn't work, because when it comes to people, consistent solutions that are exactly the same for everyone often end up shortchanging every single person by at least a little bit and disadvantaging some people more than others. So if we then categorize almost every business problem as being a people problem, it sort of puts consistency at the right level of priority, which is that there's a few things you really need consistency for. You really need consistency for externally imposed rules like health and safety. You really need consistency for compliance reasons. You really need consistency for kind of your core customer standards. So the things that you absolutely have to meet and there's no negotiation on that, that you need to be consistent. But even then, you're pretty much being consistent in terms of outcome. And some organizations underneath that consistency have got all sorts of, have got people kind of getting there in all sorts of different ways. But that vision has been set for what that external or output consistency should be. And then people find their own way to get there. So it's being clear on where you need to be consistent and really challenging yourself on when consistency is important, rather than the sort of old paradigm way of doing it, which is that consistency is the be-all and end-all, and that's the end goal in all cases. Because actually what we would say is that each individual finding a way to choose to show up and choose to be there and choosing to be a really effective and successful employee and finding their way of doing it is more important than being prescriptive in their way of working every single day.
Got it. No, mate, makes sense to me. And kind of final bit before we wrap up, there must be, and I don't want to generalize too much, because there'll be some great businesses that trust and empower their employees now and others that are on that journey. There must also be some businesses that are relatively hierarchical and autocratical, that trust and empowering colleagues to that degree is a real stretch for them.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to say that there's sort of having a very highly empowered culture is the right thing to do, and then having something that's more prescriptive is the wrong thing to do. And even within more progressive organizations, you'll find occasions where being more controlling or being more hierarchical is appropriate. So it's not really about that. It's more about creating an organization where the organization and the individuals within it are making a genuinely informed choice about how they want to be. So if you look at your organization, and let's say your organization needs to be very, very responsive, and maybe safety is of the utmost, so like emergency services and things like that, there's going to be a lot that they have to do that's very hierarchical and very linked to rank, and that some decisions need to be taken centrally. And there will be some things where you really want to be as responsive as you possibly can be, employees who are close to the issues and close to the problems to be making those decisions. And so what we'd say to organizations like that is you just need to kind of become more choiceful, rather than sort of protecting the fact that what you do is incredibly important, and the way in which you see protecting that being highly controlling at every level and in every interaction. Instead, choose the things that are really important and stick to being sort of more controlling for those things, and then recognize that you can sort of unleash people and unleash trust and unleash empowerment outside of that.
Perfect. That's brilliant. And Trevor, if people want to find out more, kind of further this conversation, dip in and out, where's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn, as always, is a really easy place to find me. Yeah. And there aren't lots of Trevor Hudsons about, so that's super easy. And, of course, we can put a link in the show notes as well.
Yep.
And, of course, they can come to Tough Leadership Development and engage with us that way if this is a journey that they want to go on and they would like some support.
Brilliant. It's been a pleasure chatting. Always interested to find out kind of different ways, different models, where there's opportunities for people to do things differently, especially where there's a productivity angle. So I know you're busy and I know you're kind of full of cold. So I appreciate you taking the time out for today.
No worries at all. Thank you, Simon. It's been good to chat.
Thanks, Trevor.